live in the studio today. We have J.P. Morrell, State Senator for District 3 in the state of Louisiana, representing New Orleans and the New Orleans metro area. Good morning, J.P.
Good morning.
All right, and joining me in the studio, I am Matt Toops, co-hosting along with Janet Hayes and John Lynn Miller. So, J.P., we are here today to talk about your work dealing with sexual assaults on college campuses. Can you tell us what you've been doing on that and what is the situation right now in Louisiana?
Well, like many people, I followed the report that Senator McClassell came out with the U.S. Senate, which did the anonymous survey across the country on what the current status of sexual assault was. She had some concerns that the reporting under the Clery Act was not accurate or is not being done properly. And when that report came out, it was pretty horrifying. The numbers were by a factor of 100 higher than everyone thought they would be. Policies at colleges were terrible. We found that in 30% of Division I athletic programs, the sexual assault of accusations against athletes were being investigated by athletic departments and other similarly horrendous things. And this report was an anonymous survey done across the country. And my initial reaction when I saw it, besides being horrified, was since it was an anonymous aggregate survey, there actually was no data specific to Louisiana. So I turned around and made a request to the Board of Regents and all the different public universities and asked them a series of questions that were drawn from McCaskill's report and waited for a report, which they sent to me on September 15th. And the data from that report was light or inconclusive, to say the least, but what I did see in it had some very disturbing trends. Obviously, the thing that jumped out, and I think that the media ran with, was at a college, let's say like LSU, they said that in the last 5 years, they have had 22 instances of reported sexual assault. Now, with a student body of 30,000 kids and a national average that varies anywhere from the high end of 20% to the low end of 5%, 5% of 30,000 is 1,500. So saying that over a five-year period, your total number was 22 was pretty upsetting. It was pretty glaring that something was wrong here. Even if you take the position that that's the amount of reports that were actually reported, and I do have some issues with that, it was very disturbing that many universities in a similar situation didn't acknowledge the fact that if that is actually the number, they have a huge underreporting problem, which means that there must be an environment at that university where young women do not feel comfortable reporting for a variety of reasons. So,
let's check it real quick, make sure I heard the right. Over LSU says they have 22 in 5 years?
5 years. That's not 22 per year. That's 22 over 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, which was pretty...
That's difficult to believe.
It would make LSU the safest city on earth. And considering that this is a school that regularly breaks the top 10 party schools in the country, it defies reason, defies logic. And there were a couple of standout universities. University of Louisiana at Lafayette has a very robust policy when it comes to prosecuting and investigating sexual assault. They have a separate unit set in the campus police to look at it. There were universities like University of Louisiana Monroe, which does a tremendous amount of outreach trying to educate their students on what sexual assault is, why it's not okay. And what was really encouraging is that, unlike many universities that kind of just their response to sexual assault is to give women self-defense classes, it was both women and men saying, you both need to know why this is not okay. Here's what you both should be doing to avoid it, and really kind of treating kids like adults.
Yeah, JP. So this is really disturbing, this information that's come out. And I'm wondering, are universities underreporting these rapes? Or you mentioned that women are reluctant to come forward to report if they've been sexually assaulted. Do you have any thoughts about why women might be inhibited?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. I really firmly believe that a big part of dealing with sexual assault on college campuses is educating both students and staff. What I found in my research thus far is that, my older and younger brother are both police officers, so they have some experience with dealing with the criminal aspect of investigating sexual assault. And something they told me early on when I saw these numbers, they said, listen, the thing we're taught first as a police officer is that the first interaction that a victim has with an authority figure will have a complete impact on whether they ever actually report. And that's why there's special officers who deal with sexual assault victims, because they're in a very fragile state. And they said, listen, just from our opinion, if you have someone who's been sexually assaulted, their tendency is to go to an authority figure. It could be an officer, it could be a professor, and say, this just happened to me. If that person in that first interaction gives them any negative response whatsoever, if that professor who doesn't know any better, who's never been taught how to deal with the situation, if he goes, well, that's pretty messed up. I mean, you know, you're going to have to confront that guy, or, you know, that's going to be a really, really hard process. You know, this may derail your athletic, your academic career. If that response is anything other than completely supportive, that person may never report that incident. They may go into the woodwork and they just may try to forget it. And obviously you can't do that. So there's a couple of things in there that systemically are problems. And that's kind of why, as I kind of started peeling the onion layers of this issue, we started realizing that there's a tremendous amount of work across the board that has to be done at universities.
Great. And I'm going to ask you about what you're doing at the legislative level to bring about bills that may be able to deal with this and correct the situation. But there was an incident recently, was reported in the New Orleans Times-Picayune, that women that are going to seek post-rape treatment at hospitals are being billed anywhere from $1,500 and up for their post-rape treatment. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a pretty horrendous situation. It's before the privatization of public hospitals. When a woman came in who'd been assaulted, all of the treatment related to that assault was basically absorbed by the public hospital. Now, that necessarily wasn't the best practice either, because really there should have been a revenue stream covering this forever, and that was something that was to their deficit. But at the very least, in those situations, you weren't having women billed after coming in and self-reporting. It's a pretty horrendous situation. Currently, only a couple of hospitals do this, but what they do is when you come in, under federal and state law, the rape kit itself, you cannot charge for it. It's free, essentially. However, if you've ever been familiar with what a rape kit entails, it is the most invasive, embarrassing, and humiliating procedure you can go through after a sexual assault. So the fact that that is free is not a gift from the state. It's just human. Now, the thing which was kind of infuriating, if you follow the situation, is that the related treatment, and by related treatment, we're talking about a pregnancy test, we're talking about an HIV test, we're talking about the availability of medications that could suppress or prevent sexually transmitted diseases. What's very frustrating, not just from the hospital level, is that this is what was being treated as elective or something that they could balance bill you for. Now, on one level, the hospital, obviously, there's a problem there. But another thing that troubled me is that insurance companies were treating this as if it was elective, as if you were going in, you know, for that second flu shot or something. So as Representative Helena Moreno and I have dug into this issue, it's a multi-layered issue. And like I've told many people, we're working on a legislative fix, but it's not going to be. I mean, the thing that obviously the first thing we're going to look at is trying to change the language in the Victim Reparations Fund. Because in many states, that's how they pay for it. The federal government gives us up to $17 million a year for victim reparations, and we don't spend much of it. There's so many caveats in that language of the law that very few people ever qualify for it. A great example is under the current law, if you've ever been convicted of a felony within 5 years, you're not eligible for anything from the Victims Compensation Fund. And like I was telling one of the members of it, I said, well, you know, second possession of marijuana is a felony. So you're saying if somebody got picked up with a second joint and that person is later attacked and sexually assaulted, he's like, well, they're not eligible for the fund under this law. And that's ridiculous. So some tweaks that they've made to that law. But beyond that, you can't let the insurance companies off the hook. There should not be something where some guy at HMO or insurance company who's a penny pincher is looking at it going, well, you know, did she really have to get that HIV test after she was raped? That should not even be an option. And what many states do is they put all the options on the table. When a person goes in, they self-report for a sexual assault, they get to pick from the list of options. If that person has robust insurance and they want to have their insurance pay for it, they can. if that person is a, let's say, a college student, and they don't want their parents to find out that they were sexually assaulted, they can choose to use the victim's compensation fund versus report it to their insurance, which will show it on their parents' bill. So there's a couple options out there. My goal before session is to come up with a comprehensive group of bills to make sure at the end of the day, no woman ever receives a bill ever after a sexual assault from hospital again.
Well, that's really, that's the work that you're doing is so needed, and we're so grateful. And is there anything that listeners can do to help you do your job better? Is there any way listeners can participate in this process? You want us to sign petitions? Do you want us to come out and do rallies? I mean, what can just someone that's listening right now that feels strongly about this issue, what can they do to help you in this legislative session coming up? And also, is there anything at the local level with our local government and federal level, the federal government, that we need to be thinking about as well?
Well, on the federal level, Senator McCaskill has a very robust bill she's trying to pass on the top level to deal with sexual assault. My concern has always been I support whatever Senator McCaskill's doing. The issue is that Congress is completely a mess, and I don't have much faith that that bill will survive intact throughout the process. And the interaction on the federal level with public universities and private universities is largely federal funding, and unless her bill has teeth in dealing with funding, I don't think it will be like the Clery Act 2.0, which really won't serve a purpose. What I've done thus far, what happened yesterday, we put together a working group from across the state, nonprofits, governmental entities, trying to pool ideas on how to address the college sexual assault issue. Something that I'm working on, and really this is only going to work if I can figure out how to make it work. The pushback I always get from the universities, and I got it after my report, is because we don't have enough women coming forward, they downplay the problem. And something I'm working with a variety of individuals with, including some tech-savvy people who know more about computers than I do, is I'm trying to create an anonymous Dropbox where women can tell their experiences without disclosing their identities. Because at the end of the day, unless I get specific stories from women who've been assaulted, really all I need is the years they were in school and the campus. I need to be able to show the numbers are false. Because right now, the only numbers that I have are the official numbers, the numbers of women, brave women who went to a law enforcement and reported. But once I'm able to get this Dropbox, this secure, safe Dropbox put together, I will be asking people to anonymously, just like I said, I don't want to know who you are, where you're from. I just need to know, have a catalog of experiences during time periods at university so that I can show you said during 2012 you had 3 assaults at LSU. I've got a Dropbox full of 1,500 assaults during that time. And these are women who were at your university who were assaulted and didn't come forward because you've created an environment where they were never comfortable doing it. And so that's kind of the next step. That's the thing I really want to do. But like I said, until I can figure out a technical way to create an environment where there is completely untraceable, because I know what I don't know, but I can only assume what assault victims go through. That is really going to be the silver bullet to make people take this seriously. Because right now, I mean, I was on a radio show 2 days ago, and I literally had a guy call in and tell me that sexual assault's made up, and that all the numbers are ridiculous, and that this is a feminist plot to discredit men. And I was completely taken aback and flabbergasted, but at the same time, I was like, there are people that legitimately think this, and unless you put this in their face and say, you are wrong, this is wrong, and here is the stories you have to read and tell me that same position, you're not going to have enough movement.
So I know you mentioned, your request for information was to the regents, right?
Right.
So is there have you heard anything from schools that are not state schools in Louisiana, the private schools?
Actually, the president of the independent colleges and universities voluntarily requests to be put on the Work and Study Commission because she's taken the mission. Her name is – I'm drawing a blank on her name. Her first name is Marianne. Great lady, but she's taken the position that whatever we come up for with the publics, I think the privates want to apply to them as well because they want to – more so than Board of Regents, even they acknowledge this is kind of an issue nationwide. We kind of have to wrap our hands around it. So the although we don't have any authority really over the private universities, they have stepped up and said that we want to be involved in the process and we want to help create policy and we want to be part of that policy. So,
And we're sitting here at Tulane right now talking about this, so we want to take a moment to just talk a little bit about some programs here at Tulane. So, John Lynn, let's see.
Hi, my name is John Lynn Miller, and I'm actually a member of the Sexual Aggression Peer Hotline and Education Group here on campus. What we do is we run a 24/7 hotline that's completely confidential for sexual assault survivors who are students, faculty, or staff at Tulane. Our number is 504-654-9543, and we operate 24/7. My question is, why do you think sexual assault on campuses has become such a big issue now of all times? It's always been happening. It's always been an issue. Why do you think it's become such a big topic in the media?
Well, it's honestly, I've been very surprised with how much the media has picked up after the McCaskill report versus the hundreds of reports that have come out over individual campuses over time. And I think McCaskill's report was a sea change, because whenever you read these stories about horrendous sexual assault, it was always at individual universities or colleges. And I think what happens is that there are people in the media, there are people in politics. Everyone who's a decision maker tends to come from a university. And everyone's natural assumption was, well, when I went to my university, I didn't see any of that, so that must be just at Columbia. And I think when the McCaskill report came out and you started seeing this aggregate data, which said, well, it's more likely than not that there was a whole lot of sexual assault going on where you came from as well. I think it really shook people. And like I said, I'm actually more surprised more individuals in more states haven't known what we're doing in Louisiana and really challenged their own universities. Because like I said, the aggregate data was very useful and thought provoking, but it was aggregate anonymous data. So You don't really know from McCaskill's report if you have a problem in your state, other than those big news stories that break out occasionally. So I think what happened was when McCaskill's report came out, people couldn't just blow it off and say, well, that just happens at Georgetown, it just happens at wherever. They had to really face the fact that if my university, as was required, participated in the survey, statistically speaking, it has to be potentially part of the problem. So I think that's really what changed the conversation. I think that when you look at the sheer amount of stories that have happened almost like in a quick succession over the last 2 months with domestic violence and sexual assault in general, I think that's kind of thrown fuel to the fire. And one of the challenges that I know as my working group has going forward is it's going to be very challenging, but we kind of have to keep that amount of pressure on, because once the pressure falls off, the ability for people to actually legitimately try and fix the problem falls off as well.
Mm-hmm. So I'm a member of the hotline on campus. We also have other services. We have CAPS, which is our psychological counseling service that helps victims. We have the Office of Violence Prevention and Support Services, and they deal directly with students who've made complaints or who have come forward and reported assaults. What other sort of resources would you like to see on campuses for survivors?
Well, the biggest concern I have from the reports I've gotten thus far from our own local universities is there's no established baseline policy for the state. And I know some people say it sounds trivial, but when you don't have a baseline established as to what a protocol should be for sexual assault, every university kind of makes it up as they go along. And since there is no baseline, every interpretation is technically correct. And what I'd like to see more of, first, I think that when you're dealing with someone who has suffered sexual assault or trauma, depending on the scenario and situation, there needs to be a protocol as to when something should go immediately to law enforcement. I've seen too many times in just the reports that I've seen where you have pretty horrendous violent sexual assaults and universities try to handle them in-house. Obviously, there should be some deference given to the victim, but at the same time, if you have someone as a sexual predator, they shouldn't have the benefit of, you know, getting suspended for 6 months or whatever the university's response is. I think at some level, you have to mandate to universities that I don't want to interject law enforcement necessarily into that initial contact, because they could deter victims from reporting. But at the same time, it's a sexual assault and if it's and it should be at some point kicked over to law enforcement. The other issue, which is an ongoing issue, is that there is simply not enough amount. There's not enough education to individuals on the front end. Something I've, as a lawyer, I went to Tulane Law School just to do disclosure. As a lawyer, it amazes me how many people don't have a basic understanding of the law. I was talking to a couple of gentlemen about sexual assault on college campuses, and I just in passing said, "You guys do realize a drunken woman can never consent?" And they were floored. I said, "What do you mean?" I said, "If you go to a bar and you pick up a drunk girl and she's drunk and she can barely stand up and you take her home and you guys have sex, you raped her." And they were completely floored. The thing is that I don't think a lot of people have a basic education on what the current status of the law is. And talking to these gentlemen, I asked them, I said, "Let me ask you a question. If someone had told you this in freshman orientation," he goes, "it would have changed how I acted around women in college the entire time I was there." And I said, and looking and listening to that, people aren't learning real basic skills and they aren't taking basic responsibility for what they do as adults. When you come to college, 99% of the time you're 18 or older, you're an adult. And people need to know that when you're adult, you're subject to adult laws, and basic responsibility is kind of baked into the law, but I think people aren't educated on what the law is and what your responsibility is supposed to be. So that experience told me that really we need to mandate on the state level, on some level, as we tell you where you park and which dorm you're in, it would not be very difficult to bake in an hour or two of sexual assault training or just kind of giving people an overview of what adult interactions in college are expected to be.
All right. And just in the news this week, Governor Brown in California and Governor Cuomo in New York have announced that they're mandating their schools overhaul their sexual assault policies. So hopefully Louisiana's next. We are about out of time. Thank you so much, Senator J.P. Morrell, representing New Orleans for us in the state Senate in Baton Rouge. And John Lynn and Janet, thanks so much. So we're going to be right back with Democracy Now! In just a moment.